Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everyone. I miss being here with everyone the last 2 weeks, but luckily we had Allison Garrido stepping in for me. Today, before we get started with the show, I want to take a moment to thank our sponsors, the folks over at Markham Search. Markham Search LLC offers premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States, so please do keep them in mind for all your recruiting needs. And today we have with us on the show, Robin Moriarty. Robin Moriarty, PhD, is a global business executive, speaker, author, adjunct professor, and thought leader for businesses and nonprofit organizations. She has lived on 4 continents and traveled to 60 or more countries. Over the course of her career, Dr. Moriarty has focused on aligning businesses with opportunities to create positive societal impact in North America, Latin America, Europe, and Asia Pacific. As an adjunct professor at the Fuqua School of Business at Duke University, Dr. Moriarty taught cross-cultural leadership to future global leaders. She regularly shapes her observations and advice on navigating complex work and life questions through speaking engagements for students and professionals, and as well on her website, gutsy.world. Thanks so much for joining us today, Robin.
Thank you. Really happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so tell us, how was it that you came to live on 4 different continents and become this global expert and thought leader?
Yeah, so, you know, sometimes life doesn't go exactly as you plan. And what I always say is sometimes life has better things planned for you than you have planned for yourself. I grew up in a really small town in Northwest Florida and had the opportunity when I was about 11 to take my first trip abroad. And my family went to Germany, and as soon as we landed in Germany, I remember thinking, wow, the world is really big, and I want to be a part of it, and I want to see everything that I can that's out there, and I want to learn everything I can. And I think that really kind of kicked off just a fundamental interest in other cultures, other places in the world. How do things, you know, work in different places? What's similar, what's different, and, you know, kind of what makes things click in different parts of the world. And so I think after studying in university, and I went and I got a PhD that's in like international stuff, kind of economics and politics, and started a corporate career because I really wanted to kind of, you know, be in it and be in the mix about how things work in different parts of the world. So I think that's really how I kind of got started. And then through my work, was able to move around to different continents and to travel and work with people from so many different countries and cultures.
Wow, that's amazing. And what had you write this book? What game are you playing, a framework for redefining success and achieving what matters most?
So I was sitting in my office one day, a couple of years ago, the idea has been brewing for a while. I was sitting in my office one day and kind of typing emails, having a cup of coffee. And one of my favorite work colleagues, like, bursts into the room, and he's this really big guy, and he was huffing and puffing and blustering around talking about that guy's winning and we're losing and he's winning and we're losing. And I kind of looked at him, and he informed me that our CEO's executive compensation package had been announced that day, which was obviously way more money than he was making and way more money than I was making. And he kept going, he's winning. And I looked at him and I said, I don't know what you're talking about because I'm winning. And he kind of like froze in his tracks. And he was like, what do you mean you're winning? Because like, he knows I'm not making more than the CEO is making. And I said, well, I'm playing the game of who gets to spend the most amount of time in the coolest places around the world. And I'm winning. And I kind of pointed to this calendar on my wall that looks at all the different places I've been over the course of the year, where my trips are, where I've been. And it's like Shanghai and Delhi and Ho Chi Minh City and London and Prague and Istanbul and, you know, Santiago and Sao Paulo and wherever. And he looked at it and he was like, wow, that's really amazing, because you're definitely not winning the who makes the most money game, but you are winning the who spends the most amount of time in the coolest places game. And he said, you know, that's a really interesting idea. You should write a book about it. And so that was really where the idea sprang from. And I sat on it for Probably about a year and a half. And then the framework started coming together in my head, and I sat down and wrote the book.
Wow, that's incredible. And it's so true, because how often do we as human beings, we play this game? I think you and I were talking offline about earlier about, you know, having the car or the house, or for some people, it's a Gucci purse or a pair of sneakers or whatever it looks like, or having a family. But is that the game you want to be playing? And are you winning the game you really want to be playing, not the game that everybody else thinks you should be playing, right?
Exactly. And that's the part that kind of excites me the most, to be honest, because I started realizing with all this time I spent in different cultures and different countries and, you know, living and traveling abroad sounds really glamorous, but it also means you've got a lot of time alone to kind of reflect, either on airplanes or, you know, before you've made friends in a new place. You've got a lot of time by yourself to kind of sit and think about what's really going on. And I think what I realized was how much in the U.S., we focus on success. Other countries don't focus on success as much as we do, and they certainly don't define it the way we do. And in the US, I started realizing we define success. It's a bit competitive. It is about winning and kind of, you know, being better than someone else and comparing yourself to someone else. But it's also very much about financial success, power, influence, how many followers you have, how many likes you get. And then it's also about these milestones of finishing college, getting married, having kids, buying a house. You know, there's sort of these milestones that are part of what a successful life is supposed to look like. And as I was wandering around the world, I was like, wow, other people don't seem to be following those same, you know, milestones or having those same financial definitions of success that we seem to be having in the U.S. I wonder what they're doing instead. So I started learning about that and thinking about like cultural conditioning and the way we're taught to think about pursuing a successful life, which is great if that's the life you really want. But a lot of us end up pursuing those things that we've kind of been trained to pursue that are indicators of success, the handbag, the watch, the fancy car, the house, the whatever, but they're not even necessarily the things we really want. So we're pursuing something that someone else is telling us to pursue instead of doing the hard work and figuring out what we actually want to pursue. We're playing someone else's game instead of playing our own.
Yeah, and it's such an interesting inquiry. I meet so many people in a variety of careers that they wind up doing a certain job, whether it's becoming a doctor or a lawyer or whatever, you know, those are just some of the generic ones. But how rarely do you meet somebody who says, gosh, when I was 5 years old, my sister comes to mind and she wanted to be an animal trainer. And then she pursued her passion. And ever since she was five, she created a little book of, you know, a little colored crayon book of how she was going to be a zookeeper, animal trainer. And sure enough, she followed her passion straight through to adulthood. Yeah. But how many of us get sidetracked by that and just try to make other people happy?
Right. Or even finding all of your happiness or thinking that your identity and everything has to come through your job. That's very American too. You know, I can have a job that I like and that I want to do, but my passion could be somewhere else and I don't necessarily get paid for it, but my whole equation of my life works out. So I have a job, I like it, I do a good job, I perform well. It's not a toxic environment. It's not unhealthy for me, but I get to leave at 3 o'clock because I want to go practice with my band because I write music and that's what I really want to do. Or, you know, I get to travel with my work because that's what I really want to do. Or I get something else from my job that's not necessarily my job as my passion, but it fits this larger equation of how I want to be living my life and what I want to pursue. I see a lot of people getting stuck on, you know, I've got to get the next promotion. I've got to get a raise. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. But when you step back, getting the promotion might mean you don't get to travel as much. Or, you know, like there are other things that you might be giving up, like time with your kids or things like that. It's like, slow down. What is it that you really want? And how do you make the equation really work for you instead of, you know, having other people kind of putting their expectations and their versions of success onto you? It's really hard. It's very hard.
Yeah, even as you're saying this, Robin, it seems almost insurmountable, because to kind of break free of the cultural norms and say, oh, yeah, that sounds great in theory, to go spend the rest of my life traveling abroad or doing something outrageous like being a photographer, doing something that most people wouldn't find culturally acceptable. Even I'm rereading The Artist's Way right now about how many people give up being an artist because of the fact that they're told at some point or another that they can't do it. But to even begin to take that first step on the path of doing something that you want to do as opposed to what you should do seems unattainable. How do you even do that?
It's really hard. And this is, there are two big points that I think about when I think about that question, and they're in the book. The first one is, I think about gaining awareness of your cultural conditioning. And, you know, it sounds so weird, but we are all sort of socialized and trained to think certain ways. And it starts from the time that you're born. People start putting their expectations on you. And, you know, you go through this whole growing up process where you get rewarded for things like good grades, and you get punished for not good grades, or you get rewarded for certain kinds of behaviors and punished for other kinds of behaviors. And you learn what is expected and what is accepted. And you kind of fall into line because your brain, which is the second point, actually really wants you to get rewarded. And so the way your brain functions with conditioning, you know, it feels good when people are applauding you, and it feels good when someone says, good job, keep doing that. And it actually makes like chemical things happen in your brain that are feel good. And if you're getting punished, it obviously feels bad. And a lot of people that I know who study the brain a lot more than I do say that has to do with sort of this survival instinct. And if you are ostracized from the group, like your survival might be at stake. And so you want to get that reward and avoid those punishments to stay part of the group. But what happens is you start realizing over time that you've been conditioned, you've internalized those goals that other people have put on you, and you've got to start delayering and peeling those layers off to find out what it is that you really want. And that is a really hard process, because it's basically, it's unlearning stuff while your brain is freaking out and changing your behavior while the brains of people around you are freaking out because you're not doing what they're expecting you to do. And that makes people freak out. And so you're like in this place where you're freaking yourself out, you're freaking other people out around you. And then you just default back to the status quo and to your starting point because it's too hard. But for me, what I've found is, you know, and I've got a couple of worksheets in the book to kind of help work through that. What do they want for you? What do they want from you? What do you want for yourself? And trying to help pull back those different layers to understand what are expectations of other people that they're putting on you, and what are the things you really want. But once you do that, you go, okay, so now I understand this process, and I cannot, you know, have my brain freak out. I call them the little monster. I can kind of control the little monsters that pop out in my brain that are fear. I can turn them into cartoon monsters, like that movie Monsters, Inc., which is what I did. And so now when they pop out, they're these cute, fuzzy monsters. They're not these like big, scary monsters anymore. And I can say, okay, thanks for coming out, trying to protect me, but like, I'm good. I've got this. And I can move forward doing the things that I know make sense for me and doing the things that, you know, are helping me live the life and the version of success that I want to live, instead of being held back by my own brain's freakouts and other people's brain freakouts when I'm trying to make changes.
Yeah, I think as human beings, there was the technique years ago in a brain science class that somebody taught me, and it had to do with getting your brain to realize that you will survive it, even if worst case scenario, your greatest fear comes true. Nobody likes you, you're unimportant, you're ostracized. Will you physically survive it? Yeah, you will. Yeah. You might be miserable and you might suffer, but you will survive it. And then it's only from that moment that you're able, like you said, to identify those little monsters and have a little bit of fun with them, and to realize, okay, I will survive these little monsters in my head, that you can then push through it and create something new that you've never created before. But first you need that space to realize that you're going to survive it, is what I remember learning.
Exactly. That is exactly it. And I love the way you just said that because it's perfect. And then the other thing that I started realizing is, okay, I might get ostracized. And I have a lot of stories about ostracization. I have a lot of stories about relationships that have wandered off, and I've, you know, friendships and different kinds of situations where I was like really alone in some different countries and really had to like pull myself together and like move forward really alone. And what I started realizing, I remember one day I was sitting on a balcony in Argentina, and it was like a Sunday brunch thing, and I was looking around at some people who were around me who are friends, and I remember just thinking, I got to get some better friends. Like these are people who really are trying to push me in a direction that I don't want to go. And I didn't know how to handle that. And I didn't handle it very well. I sort of, you know, ditched them all, I think, and sort of isolated myself in a lot of ways, which might not have been the best way to do it, but I didn't know how else to do it at that point. But I started thinking, you know, there are like 7 billion people on the planet. Like, surely some of them will support me the way I need to be supported. And I started realizing that with like my friends, with my family, I might need to limit some of my interactions with them to make room for interactions with other people who would support me in the way I needed to be supported. And that was a really big click for me and, you know, set me on a path of looking to spend more time with people who are either pursuing their own path, not just doing what everyone else wants them to do, or people who are kind of trying to do what I thought I wanted to do and just kind of spending more time with them. And, you know, it's kind of, my sister and I talk about, you know, finding your group, finding your bumblebees from some music video a long time ago, but, you know, how do you find your group that has the people who are like you instead of you being the black sheep in your group that's always pushing against other people who are trying to make you different and somehow make you think you're not, you know, sort of fine just the way you are, you know, and they're not supporting you and moving forward. So it's a big, hard thing to do. But, you know, I always said, gosh, I'm going to be on this planet for a long time, so I better start doing it. You know, better get started. Yeah.
And I think it's so true about the people we surround ourselves with. And to your point earlier about toxic work environments, it's one thing that if you like what you're doing, you know, and, you know, I think there was a question one of my mentors taught me years ago who said that we should always ask a job seeker these three questions. Do you like your job? Do you like what you're doing? And do you like the people in the company? And if any one of those answers to those is no, then the person has a valid reason to leave. But if the answer to all three of those is yes, you're better off than 90% of the people. But to your point, even then, maybe a fourth question that people should be asking is this something you chose? And maybe that's the fourth question that nobody ever thought to incorporate into recruiting. Is it your choice or is it somebody else's choice for you to be there? Is it your wife's choice because you need to bring home the bacon, or your husband's choice because you're the breadwinner, you know, or is it your choice to be here? Because if we're not here, it goes back to being present. Like, how many of us are checked out? We get into the office, many people clock in, clock out, or show up, but they're not there for work. They're going there because they're supposed to be there, but they're not actually there.
Right. And I think I would go back to, you know, whose idea is it, you know, was this your idea or someone else's? I go back to things that you're taught when you're a kid, because I think that's in there a lot too. You know, there are the practical sort of adult things, but then there are also sort of the things you learn as a kid about what's normal. You work in an office, or you work in a store, or you work in a whatever, and you sort of internalize that when you're a kid, and then it's really hard to deviate from that. You know, you work for someone, or you work for yourself. Those are the kinds of things that I also think people need to look at when they're doing that self-reflection and evaluating. And I think you're right, as the leader of a business and then different organizations that I've led, I mean, you can tell when people are just phoning it in and when people really want to be there. And there have definitely been times in my career where I've had conversations with people on my team where I've been like, you know, like, I kind of want to see you fly. I want to see you thrive. And I'm not sure this is the place where that's going to happen. And, you know, so how can I help you get to a place where that's going to happen? And I've definitely had conversations with my bosses of, you know, I'm not sure this is really, like, you're not getting the best out of me. And I would like for, you know, to be able to give the best out of me. So how can we change? How can we adjust? But I think you have to, like, realize that in yourself and in those around you. And then again, put those little monsters to rest and have the conversations that need to be had to have a breakthrough and to be able to get on the other side to be, you know, a better employee, a better leader, a better manager, you know, just kind of helping people through. And I think because in the US we put so much focus on our jobs as our identity, our measure of success, our, you know, it's your identity in so many ways. And that makes it really hard for us when we're talking about changing and moving around if it's not a positive situation. Fears kick in very quickly.
So let's talk about that for a minute. How do you begin to really get through the monsters? We talked about it a little bit. Okay, you clear out the monsters, you draw the monsters, you create this new space. But when you're sitting down and you're confronted by those monsters, I don't know about you, as much fun as it is, I was just reading that today in The Artist's Way of writing down your monsters and the people who killed your creativity as a child, and then kind of writing a little X through them. I get that theoretically, but then does that really help you to move through those fears and to get to your point, a breakthrough, to be able to have something new be available?
My experience, my monsters never go away.
Okay, let's be honest about that. They don't,
they don't wander. I told somebody the other day, I was like, you know, just kind of want to put them on a boat and send them out to sea, you know, like, let them get lost in the ocean somewhere, but they're always with me. And I think that's, you know, that's kind of the comment that I would make. You can draw them out and you can draw an X through them, but they're still with you. And so for me, it's not even making friends with them, which some people say you should do. But for me, it's more, you know, kind of figuring out how to work together, I guess. You know, there are times when I'll give in to those monsters and we'll have a weekend where I am just down and out and scared and, you know, just ruminating on all kinds of stuff and anxiety and whatever. But then I'll say, okay, you get 2 days and you can do this for 2 days and then you got to stop it. And you got to move on and you got to get through it. And so instead of like denying it, it's kind of like, yeah, they're just going to be with me. So let's figure out how to manage it. And let's, you know, have a conversation with you and say, you know, we'll do this for a little while, but we're not going to do this forever, you know, and I'll let you say all of those things that you need to say and worry about. And then I'm going to move on. You know, I think the other thing that I realized was once I started saying my fears out loud, not even to anyone else, but just like out loud to myself, they start getting smaller. So I'm afraid, I don't know, pick a big fear that you have, you know, I'm afraid I'm going to lose my job. I'm afraid I'm not going to get the promotion. I'm afraid. Yeah. But when you start saying it out loud, you go, okay, it's out there. Okay, now what do I do with it? It's out there. Okay, well, I'm not going to have a job. Okay, so then I'm going to have to go find a job. Okay, so what does that process look like? Okay, well, it's exhausting. And, you know, I've been in situations where I have to look for jobs. And it's not the most fun thing to do at all. For me, it's, you know, really awful, actually. But so, you know, okay, but I'm going to have to do this. Okay, so what am I going to need to have to do this? Okay, well, where do I go get that? You know, how do I redo my resume, or how do I make some phone calls to some people, or how do I do this? And so once you say it out loud, it kind of sets in motion this path of activity, right? At least for me, I don't know. But I think that once you say it out loud, it starts getting smaller. It's when I keep it inside that I can sit and ruminate on it for a very long time. And, you know, especially things that are seen as failures, you know, you lost your job. And again, that goes back to our identity being so defined by success, and success is your work and all of this kind of stuff. But, you know, once you say it out loud, it sort of puts some activity in motion.
Yeah, and it makes it something that you can actually deal with as opposed to this thing that's kind of eating you up inside and repeating over and over. And it's kind of like any obsessive negative thought. And it's just choosing right where you are. You know, you might be in a crappy job right now. Somebody out there right now might be sitting here listening to the show and thinking, gosh, you know what? I really don't like my job. And it's choose the job that you don't like. Right now, you get to choose your circumstances the way they are. And it's when you stop resisting things the way they are, not having a job, having a job you don't like, feeling dissatisfied. First, begin with seeing where you're at, and then you can move on to something else. But if you're resisting where you're at, one of my teachers years ago said it's kind of like putting icing on shit, pardon my French, but you know, you're just going to be doing more of the same, and you're never going to get to the bottom of it because there's still, pardon my French, but shit at the bottom.
Right. No, but that's right. And I think that's part of, you know, kind of facing the reality and understanding why you're in that situation. One of my favorite sayings is examine what you tolerate. And I learned very toxic work environment, but man, I was putting up with it. And I was putting up with it for a variety of reasons. You know, maybe I was living in a different country and I really wanted to keep my visa in that country. So that was tied to my employer. So I kind of had that, you know, my ability to live in that country was dependent on that company. So, and then I had, you know, other reasons that I was kind of put up with that. Some of them were logical, some of them were not. But, you know, I had to start out going, wait, why am I tolerating this? Examine what you tolerate, especially at work. And what you're going to do if you do that, you know, why do I let myself be in this toxic environment? Or why do I let that fear keep me from doing something else? And you're going to end up doing some pretty deep reflection that is going to either get you to a place where you can kind of accept and handle and manage and see something from a different angle, or that's going to help move you forward, you know, personally and maybe even professionally, by prompting yourself to change.
Exactly. I love that. Well, tell me, Robin, you know, we could talk about this for a long time. I mean, this idea is such a wonderful idea about what is the game? What game are you playing, and kind of how that shows up in all of our lives, personally and professionally. Were there any takeaways or any point you would love our listeners to walk away from today's show with?
Yeah, absolutely. So if I think about what's really important, it's this whole idea of, you know, cultural conditioning and all these different messages that we internalize that are really external messages. They're not really you, but they're things that other people are putting on you. And going through that process of peeling those layers off and understanding what's really you, not just what other people want you to be, is an important process and something that's fundamental. The second part is, how do you deal with those little monsters that we've been talking about, and that you can deal with them. And, you know, once you start dealing with them, maybe they're not as scary as they were before. And so I think that's a really important part. And then the third part is just this whole idea of, you know, you don't have to play the game that everyone else is playing or that everyone else says that you must. There's 7 billion people on the planet. There's so many different ways you can live your life, and just kind of don't let yourself get trapped in something that you don't like. Find the tools and find the way to move into something that's meaningful for you and just kind of make sense for you personally and professionally to have that fulfillment and to have that joy that is, for me at least, what life is really about.
I love that. That's brilliant. Well, tell our listeners, where can they find the book? I know it just got launched. I think it was September 10th, so just last week, right?
Yes. Yeah, it was published September 10th. It's called What Game Are You Playing? And you can find it at major retailers. So Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Target.com, Waterstones, a couple of other, you know, online retailers and bookstores are carrying it. And it will be in airports starting in October. So if you're
That's
like
exciting.
Me, you travel a lot. It's an awesome airport book, if you ask me. And then you can find out more at gutsy.world, which is the website. And also, if you're interested, I write on Forbes.com. So people can look for me on Forbes.com. You can go to gutsy.world and check things out with your favorite book retailer.
Love it. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Robin. And thanks so much for everybody who tuned in today or downloads the show in the future. As a reminder, you can download the show later in the week on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. You can also find it if you Google it. It's on a lot of different other podcast websites as well. Or if you prefer to listen to the show immediately afterwards and glean any tidbits you might have missed, you can also go to the latalkradio.com website, go to Channel 1, Get Yourself the Job, and at the bottom of our Get Yourself the Job page is an archive of this show as well as a show that we record them at your leisure. So feel free to find the show there. And we also invite you to connect with us on Facebook. We have a Get Yourself the Job page on Facebook, and we'll often share the show as well as other articles and things that might not make it to the air. So thank you again for joining us today, Robin. And thank you to everybody out there who tuned in.
Thank you.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.